Just got a free coffee with my EarnIFI points.
Your what?
The points I get with the new EarnIFI app from BP and Amoco. I got 250 for signing up and more every time I fill up or buy anything in the C-store.
Oh, can you use points for fuel?
Of course.
And discounts and deals?
On anything.
Oh, like chips?
Mm-hmm.
Sodas?
You got it.
The actual slushy machine.
Only what's actually for sale. But you do get double the points for the first 90 days. Just go to EarnIFIRewards.com to download the app.
Available at participating locations only. App content is subject to change.
Don't seat them near me.
Oh, I've taken care of that. You're at the boring end of the table. These people are fun.
Oh, are they? Are they fun? Oh, we should find some Gorman guests for tonight and see how amused they are. Your fun friends just cut off their shipping lanes yesterday. Do you know how many will starve? Perhaps we can laugh about it over the third course.
Perhaps you should have a rest.
If you make me pay attention, I will, and you won't be happy. Don't do this again.
There's rumor you bought me a present.
It's going back.
Must everything be boring and sad?
Hello and welcome to the Star Wars TV Cast, episode 32. I'm Jonathan.
And I'm James. And this week we're covering Andor, season 1, episode 4, Aldani.
Aldani. And we are back, episode 4. Great to be in. And James and I are both on the road, so forgive us if we're coming in a little bit late or sound a bit funny.
I'm a little bit slow. It's very early. It's very early.
I'm recording from an attic in London, in Primrose Hill. And James, where are you recording from?
I'm whispering from LA at 5 o'clock in the morning.
But we are here to bring you all the good chats about Andor. And this week I thought we'd bring back the Star Wars question of the week, seeing as James is a new host for this. And we're going to start with a basic one for James. And it would be, what is your favourite Star Wars spaceship?
Well, I had to think about this for about 3 seconds. I'm going to say Snowspeeder. Because as a kid, when you, and we're going back to the 80s, when you saw that ship, it was the first time you saw a fighter flying low altitude across a planet in Hoth.
Yeah,
on Hoth.
In atmosphere.
And also from the visual effects side, this is before. I mean, the kids now are just numb to sort of amazing VFX. Mm. So for us, we're like, wow, that was pretty special. And it looked real. And I just love the way it moves and the way the air brakes come on and it pops back. And it's just like, I just think it's just the best sort of low altitude fighter that they've ever made.
Yeah. And my favorite bit was when they're looking for Han and Luke. And you're in the POV from the cockpit, and you're going up and over the hills of snow, and you're feeling yourself move with it.
Yeah, up and over the mountains of Norway or wherever they filmed that. It was great. I mean, and I just it reminded me of World War II once, because you've got your gunner or your bomber, whatever, is back to back with you in the back.
Yeah.
And
you got your tail gunner.
Exactly. And it was just, it was just a different design that we'd seen. We hadn't seen anything like it. And again, it was just the way the ship moved that I loved. And it comes with a grappling hook. So, what more could you ask for?
Yeah.
I mean, who put that on there? It's like fucking genius. Imagine if they
just
hadn't.
In case, yeah.
Just in case. It's like, oh, dear. So we might need to haul some banthas with this or perhaps take down a very big walker. Let's pop on a grappling hook on it. But I thought that was genius. And so, yes. And yours? What's yours?
Well, I'm always go with the classic X-Wing. That is, I just can't go away from it. It is my favourite ship. The moment I fell in love with it was when the Red Leader said, "Lock your spars in attack position." Yeah. And you're in space and you just see all the wings just open up and into place. And then you just say, "Oh my God, here we go." And then they peel off on down to the Death Star and we are off.
Yeah, it is great. That just that moment, that mechanical sound. Again, Star Wars does it so well with mechanical, futuristic stuff. It's, you know, it's not beep, 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 beep. It's like you hear the clunk and the pistons going as those wings open and lock. It's good choice, sir. Yeah, good choice.
Well, I thought you might have gone for the Millennium Falcon, but I like the Snowspeeder. That's one of my all-time favourites as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to choose from the classics, but, you know, you put me under pressure, so...
Yeah, just bringing it up at the last minute, as I always do.
Yeah, thanks, buddy.
Okay, well, we have another episode of world building and tension building as Cassian escapes with Luthen, and we're introduced to several more characters, Mon Mothma and Dedra and Vel Sartha. So lots more setup, but no payoff yet, which means I was very disappointed when it ended, but still very satisfied. Well, what are your first thoughts, James?
Well, exactly what I was thinking. I think this is a great episode for fleshing out like a lot of new characters. Like you said, you've got Val and the Rebel team, and you know the Imperials that we get to see and stuff. And it's a real slow burner. Not a single blaster fired, I think.
No.
That's perfectly fine with me. Perfectly fine. There's a lot to unpack in this, and my first disclaimer of today, apart from being half asleep, is that I might not get to a couple of things because there was a lot in this, and it could have done with a double podcast.
Yeah, well, that's the great thing so far about Andor. I am loving the slow burn feel of it, as we continuously say, and it is building up for, I think, going to be a massive episode next time. A lot of payoff, and but we'll get to all that.
Yeah, how many episodes is it this first season?
So 12 episodes this season, and then another 12, so 24 in total.
I know, because I'm worrying that we're four in. I'm like, oh my God, I'm doing the negativity thing of counting down how many are left already.
Yeah, no, I know. It's so funny because I did read an article and that Tony Gilroy said that the season two won't be out till 2024. So savor these Star Wars moments.
Oh no. Okay. All right then. My other sort of like opening thought that I loved from this week as well, we see Coruscant again.
Yeah.
And just from a visual point, we see that top-down pan as you come over the city. And again, another clever way to sort of draw us in and think we're subconsciously that we are in the real world, because how many times have you seen New York portrayed like that in a movie?
That's
when
right.
When you're going over the grids of Manhattan and stuff, and it's flat down and stuff, and then to see they do it with Coruscant, I thought was a very nice, different way to show the city.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, let's get into it, shall we? Okay, so this is Season 1, Episode 4, Aldani, directed by Susanna White, written by Dan Gilroy, and created by Tony Gilroy, and they are brothers, Dan and Tony. And so, James, what's your first point?
Okay, all right. I'm going to start by saying I'm very proud to be Imperial. I mean British. I mean English. I mean, look, I know this is filmed in the UK and stuff, and The New Hope was... you know, pretty much all Empire, they were all British and stuff. But come on, this is 2022. Like, there's diversity in filmmaking, right? Unless it's the Empire. And then, of course, it's right, give it to the Brits. And that's it. But joking aside, I mean, I just loved it. Like, that whole room of the Imperials, like, when they're sort of assessing in the ISB, I think it's brilliant. And we get to meet two great new sort of British evil people.
So yes.
Let me start off, and I'm pronouncing this correctly, as they do in Andor. We meet Lieutenant Denise. Denise Goff, who plays Dedra. Yeah, exactly. And that's what I love about it. It's like, yep, there's no lieutenants here, even though, you know, Disney and everything. Maybe an American company, but we are lieutenant. But let's talk about Deirdre first. I mean, she's great. The first scene where we see her, she's walking and she's in a trench coat.
Yeah.
And to me, that just symbolizes Cold War. That is Harry Palmer. That is Michael Caine in the Ipcress Files in like 1965.
Right.
It's just perfect, you know. And she walks up to that building, the ominous ISB. Let's talk about this. ISB.
Well, it's just those creamy colours, you know, layer upon layer, and then and you're right. There is the Imperial Security Bureau in that beautiful brutalist architecture building designed to impose and intimidate.
Yeah, anyone who walks up to it when it walks away. But I just love it. We now have the ISB, which is in effect the CIA or the KGB or MI6. It's great.
Or the FBI.
I would say more CIA, though, right?
No, you're right. It's more international in this case.
And as you know, and as they get into it later, they cut out the cancer. They cut out the. You know, they find the problems and they remove them. But I digress. The two characters we meet, so then we meet sort of Lieutenant Blevin as well. By the way, Lieutenant Blevin, played by Ben Bailey, who's very multi-talented. He's also a rapper.
Is he?
Yeah, his rapper name is Doc Brown. But that's not the time-traveling version. That's not the time-traveling version. And Denise as well. Like, does she sound familiar to you, Jonathan?
There is some familiarity about most of the characters.
Shall I reveal?
Do reveal, please. Yes.
She is the voice actor of Yennefer. That is changing how you look at her now.
Yes. Obviously from The Witcher. From The Witcher 3. For us, those non-gamers, but I'm sure everyone saw the series.
But she also had voice acting in Star Wars Battlefront game as well. Anyway, so she's versed from that. But yeah, I just want to talk about the sort of the sparring we have between these two characters. I think they're great, and it's when they're both clearly sort of like cold, brutal ladder climbers. We'll call them both. But
exactly,
I just love it when Blevin sort of warns her, steady the ladder before you start climbing. And you fall here, you fall alone. That's some great writing again this week. So, and again, just that back and forth, the electricity between them, I think is brilliant. And you know, clearly this is going to spiral, and I can't wait to see how this sort of pays out with both of them and stuff. So, but again, it just reminds me of a really good British police sort of like drama or something. These two like going at each other in the office and stuff.
Yeah, we've gone away from the office of last week to the higher levels of the corporate part of the thing this week. So
that's something else I'll talk about later. But it's brilliant. But yeah, I mean that's my first thing. Is I'm just very excited to see how like Blevin versus Miro works out. Like which one of them will sort of gain the favour of the hierarchy and will move up.
ISB head, Partagas, he was great too. Another classic
British actor,
And just he was just so condescending to everyone and dismissive of everyone. It was just so perfect. And when he was asking, what the mission was, and she said, we're here to further security objectives by collecting intelligence, providing useful analysis, and conducting effective covert action. And of course, that was going to not fly well with the Partagas, and of course it didn't. And she kind of humiliated herself in that moment. No one else was stupid enough to speak up.
It's just his delivery is brilliant. That is verbatim, perfect, blah blah blah, and wrong. That room reeked of like A New Hope on the on the Death Star or one of the Star Destroyers. It's just like this immaculate. I mean, and again, let's talk about. I know I ramble about wardrobe a lot, but.
No, I think wardrobe is an integral part of this. But did that room just suddenly reminded me of the room, but in opposite colour? Because there was a room where Tarkin and was talking about the Death Star and Vader goes, the power of the Death Star pales in comparison to the power of the Force.
The ability to destroy a planet is insignificant next to the power of the Force.
And so they had the, I think they had that same big round circular table, and everything was in black, and whereas this one had that and everything was in white, which is almost a little bit more intimidating.
The choice of colours as well is great, and the fact that he refers to them as the surgeons, or does he say the surgeons or the medical wing, doesn't he?
Where we cut
out the problems and stuff, and that whole slightly off-white, immaculate sort of uniforms, like, you know, it's
insidious at the same time.
Exactly. It's like, would you really want, if you walked into a doctor's office and it looked like that and they were dressed like that, I'd be leaving very quickly. It's like, yes, we're very efficient.
Yeah. And with the slick back hair of the Pardigas, it's just like he was very, very intimidating.
I don't want to obsess over Denise Goff too much, but her hair as well, immaculate. I mean, it's just like, she's just pristine, sort of like kick-ass, sort of like by the book Imperial. So I think it was great introduction to them.
Well, that kind of leads me onto what I wanted to talk about, was the actual production design of Andor, which I think has been brilliant. And I was reading a bit by Tony Gilroy, and one of the first things he did was to bring in the production designer from Chernobyl, who is Luke Hull. So that's why it has this brutalist feel to it. And he said, you know, he's only 12 years old, but he's the perfect guy for us to bring us in. And it was almost a test for Disney to see how far they would go into a darker and more sinister version of Star Wars. And
did you say 12 years old?
Well, that's how Tony Gilroy referred to him.
Oh, I see.
He said he was very young. Yeah.
<What's>
He wasn't 12. No, but he was a very young production designer.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Coming with production stuff. I've got these crayons and I've drawn this.
Exactly.
Oh, God, Tony's brought his fucking nephew in again, everybody. He just wants to make
The conference room at the ISB was just so gorgeous, with the textured walls and the giant white ceiling light that was falling down on top of them. And then with Mon Mothma's beautiful apartment, all in white.
Yeah.
You know, but it seems, you know, they're mirroring each other's, but this one was much more serene and had like the giant, white bonsai style trees. I don't think you can have a giant bonsai tree, but it was in that kind of style of the bonsai throughout the apartment. And all the gold detailing and the texture of it was just gorgeous, big arches and all of that sort of thing. And even going through to the 70s flying car that parked.
Oh, my God, her right Cadillac, outside. Yes.
Yes. It was a Cadillac, isn't it? I couldn't quite place it.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's just like that beautiful Cadillac of the camera coming right into the front corner, and it's got this, you know, the gorgeous lines.
I love that car as it lands and stuff, because, I mean, it reeks of the prequels and the shininess and all the rest of it, but it is completely justified in this position and stuff. And also, it the way it comes in and lands, and it's like that beautiful area of Coruscant, and it's clearly we're in the higher echelon of that, and it's just, it's just immaculate sort of piece of design and stuff. Like very, very good.
Yeah, well, that is the thing with Coruscant, isn't it? Is the higher you are, the better off you are.
Well,
I guess in New York as well. You know, you have the penthouse apartment in New York. Yes. You're doing quite well for yourself. But again, which we see with our old friend later on. But again, we go back to the outside shots. Are just so beautiful, and they're really spending money on it, and they don't disappoint. And for those of us watching The Rings of Power, their establishing shots are incredibly gorgeous, and I feel that they've really made an effort in that sort of thing to have the establishing shots look very detailed, very expensive, and very familiar as well. Because when we came into that, it looked exactly like Coruscant would look and feel. We'll go on to Luthen's gallery later, but that was just another example of great production design. All the details again in the background, everything is filled, everything is real. I think they've really put a lot of effort into all the props and things. Yeah. But coming back to Mon Mothma's apartment, I just thought it was so Japanese, which is very, very Star Wars again. And even when the servant retreats, she retreated in a very bustly way, as if she's wearing a kimono, you know. Yeah. And I just love all the that sort of detail that they're bringing to this
on every level. And as we say, the city has its different tiers. Clearly, if I may, let's talk about our friend from the last episode and his journey through the city. I just love the fall of Khan. Like, you know, he's
it's funny because that's one of my notes too, and I have titled it the fall of Khan.
it's a classic. But I mean, I just, you know, he manages this overachiever that we manages to completely collapse a corporation and have it swallowed up by the Imperials in one strike. And I just love his journey home to his mum. It's like...
But I love that there were consequences. But go on, that journey is one of my favourite too. Yeah. So, I mean, he just cuts such a sad figure, doesn't he?
He's downbeat. The music is solemn and it's playing. And we track his journey from the spaceport arrival. And then we have his head bowed low and he's carrying this very... what looked like two heavy big metal cases. Clearly that's all he's got left in the world, because you know, from the audit, which I can talk about as well.
I wrote it down, the guy, what's his name again, from the ISB,
Lieutenant Blevin
says, "You will immediately relinquish any and all comlinks, weapons, and scandals. You will not return to your living quarters. You will leave there and be escorted to the transfer center, where you'll be issued with any person larger than the Imperial inspectors had time to inventory.
And do not pass go and do not collect 200.
Basically getting his box of possessions and being escorted by security at the front door of the office.
Reminiscent, I imagine, of being sort of like taken into prison. We're going to take this from you. It's like we'd remove everything from you. But and he's carrying these cases and he's walking through, and then we see him, he's walking through the under streets of Coruscant, which is very, very different. And this scene is directly before, I believe, we're introduced to Mon Mothma in her sort of gold, you know, in her glorious flying Cadillac, above. But I just love the production design again, like the apartment complex. It just reminds me of so many of the council blocks, like around where I used to live in Southeast London. And it's brilliant because everyone lives on top of each other, and everyone knows each other's business, and you've got those awkward sort of walkways you have to pass. But the moment that Mama opens the door. Yeah. And then slaps him in the face. And then hugs him and crying. And clearly she's obviously shamed by her son, but happy to have him back. And it's just brilliant. It's like she's got that proper sharp East End tongue.
And
the neighbour, and it's like, "What you looking at?" Brilliant. And then just slams the door. But I mean, it was just a perfect way for us to see different parts of Coruscant again. So that's another sort of clever world building, but it mimics the real world as well. We're not seeing shiny floating sort of like living pods or anything like that. These are just concrete sort of buildings, and everyone's stacked on top of each other and stuff. So
it was very purposeful that he went into the elevator and just went down into the depths of his misery. I hope he comes out of that. Where do you think he's going to come from here? Do you think he's going to climb his way back into the good graces of the Imperials, or do you think he'll find the rebellion?
I don't know, but he clearly has to go somewhere from this, because you don't make such a point of this of watching the fall of a character early on in the series without, you know, there being a curve one way back or, you know. So I'd be curious. I mean, I do wonder, because we're starting to stack up the amount of great sort of aspiring imperial characters we have, and I just wonder if there is room for them all. So
well, that's what I think, that
somebody has to turn. Somebody has to turn.
Yes.
So you can't have those three.
It is a rebellion.
Yeah. From within. let's see. So, yeah, what's your next point?
Well, I just wanted to talk about the classic scene with them all getting the three guys from first three getting the dressing down.
I know you're going to go
and the sergeant puts his hand up.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's just fucking brilliant. Because after his rambles in the last episode, he's like, no, just no.
Yeah, exactly. But I love how there is immediate consequences for fuck-ups like that.
Because
in any other series, you never go back to them and you wouldn't see what happened for the guys. They just kind of, they go, damn it, missed him again. And, there'd be no repercussions. You'd just be, hunting for Cassie again in the next one. But this time they're all fired. They're all thrown out of the organization.
Well, it's more than that. As we said, it's like the whole corporate zone has now been taken over.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I also found it really interesting at how, although there was a lot of explosions and people died, but you think with the scale of the Empire, an incident like that might not have come to the attention of the heads of the ISB, but it seems like the ISB has tentacles everywhere and are trying desperately under orders of Tarkin and whoever else is in control to just get control of the universe by any means possible.
Well, I think that's what this is establishing, is like the absolute firm grip of the Empire. I mean, it's like that. It's like nothing gets past them at this point. They're like, well, unless it's a little exhaust port somewhere, but whatever. but it's, they're like, he turns up and he's like, my desk, what does he say? My desk is full of reports of like corporate, mishaps or whatever. I can't remember what he calls it and stuff. But this one basically takes the cake. It's like, I just love in the background how we see the elite black armored stormtroopers overseeing.
Exactly.
They tidy the room. And I just love you see the guy scooping up all the takeout. And it's like, the Empire will not stand for takeout. you just see those blue noodles getting just thrown in a bin. And I was like, that's brilliant. Yeah. That was very, very good. The delivery, the acting, and the script. It's like combined ingredients of idiocy, ineptitude, and total disengagement.
That there were real consequences in this version of Star Wars, which is great.
Yeah, yeah. And the commander goes, but I know nothing about this. I wasn't in. He's like, exactly, like, bloody idiot. It's like you took a jolly for the weekend to deliver a report, and this is what happens. But I thought it was a very good way of showing us basically how the Empire comes to run and rule everything. They're like, well, if you want something doing right, do it yourself. And they come in and they take
advantage of a mistake. Yeah. Never let a good crisis go to waste. So as soon as the local security messes up, a simple, smash and grab, they're in there, and now they've taken over the whole thing, and there's just going to be TIE fighters patrolling the skies.
Can I just interrupt? I've just got to say this. I have a Star Wars moment from this episode.
Yes. Go on, James.
Sonic joy is what I'm calling this. The moment when those TIE fighters come over the ridge.
I know. And you can just hear them in the background.
And he's like, what's that noise? And then it's just reminiscent of a Bell Huey or something, or a Black Hawk just coming up from nowhere. Yeah. It's incredible. Anyway,
on patrol. But interestingly, that is so far the only TIE fighters we've seen. We haven't seen any stormtroopers. It's really holding back on all the Star Wars goodness, but I'm still loving every moment of it, and it still feels very, very Star Wars to me.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to the ISB room where he's like, if you have a problem, you bring in the Navy, you bring in a bunch of troopers, and that's, I think that's, That's what we're talking about here. It's like this is a different branch of the Empire that we're dealing with at the moment. But you're right. I mean, we're about to raid like a base, and clearly there are TIE fighters on base because this is... We've seen them now. So I think, don't worry, Jonathan, we're going to see lots of troopers, lots of things blowing up, and some TIE fighters crashing into mountains very soon.
We're going to get there. Yes, I can feel we're going to get there.
The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at gethumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
So what's your next point, James?
I'm going to go back to near the beginning of the episode. Let's go back to Luthen and his sales pitch.
Yeah.
Don't you want to put a real stick in the eye of the Empire and get paid for it? I love the fact he puts the get paid bit on the end because he knows he has to. These two characters as well, it's just brilliant. But so it just Cassian now has the measure of Luthen, though. He's like, oh, alliance, separatist, guerrilla, partisan front. Mm. I mean, basically, he lists all the freedom fighters that are out there. But as we can see, Cassian is just not impressed. He just thinks they're all futile. He thinks there's no point fighting the Empire. And I just love...
I want to see who the partisan front are.
French Revolution sort of...
Exactly. Yeah, go on.
No, and I just... And then Cassian tells Luthen how he's seen battle and he's been on Mimban and all of this. And it's like, and then I just love Luthen just cuts him down because he's clearly done his background check on him.
Yeah.
And he's like, he's not a war hero. He's like, he says, I was one of 50 to survive Mimban. And he's like, you were there for 6 months. You came in as a cook and you ran to survive. And you just see just Cassian's just... His whole posture drops and his eyes drop, and he knows he's got the measure of him. So he basically was a deserter in battle. So he likes to think of himself as a hero, but clearly he saved his own skin, and that's what he's good at. And that's
Well, that's interesting. But do you think they're referring back to? I wonder if it was back to the Clone Wars, because in the end he said that we're fighting each other.
Yes,
and. Yeah. And so it was just the method of the Empire to just have people fighting each other to cause chaos so they can take over the universe.
So again, you do that. Yeah, I mean, I'm going down a rabbit hole now, if I may, everybody.
Right, James. All right. Stand by,
everyone. So he mentions Mimban. So I did some reading, and interestingly, Mimban is one of those worlds that's been in the Star Wars sort of world from the beginning. And I don't know if anyone else read this. I read this as a kid. So there was a book, Splinter in the Mind's Eye, which is a great book, which was written by Alan Dean Foster in 1978. And apparently that was holding to be the sequel to A New Hope, because there was this panic that New Hope wasn't going to make much money. And therefore, they needed a cheaper option for a sequel. So, the story of Mimban is Luke and Leia crash on a marshy planet and accidentally uncover a secret base. And they're like, oh, so to make a movie of this would have been, all right, we're just going to film this in some sort of marshland area somewhere and we can knock this out for a few million. But it's a great story. I mean, they find out this base, and then like Vader's there as well, and they're all chasing for this crystal and stuff. But it was a very sort of like smaller low key thing. But clearly, Star Wars did all right, and then sort of the Empire got greenlit, and poor old Alan Dean Foster's book just got put on the shelf.
I remember reading it when I was like 12 years old.
I think because at this point, you
hungered, desperate for anything Star Wars,
anything that was Star Wars, and. And I vividly remember that book, and it's got the great illustration on the front, and you have the silhouette of Vader in the background of the glowing red crystal, and then you have Luke and Leia in the foreground and stuff. And there's a few clever sort of harkbacks to the rest of the universe in this. So anyway, if you haven't read it, go and buy it. I'm sure you can pick it up in a dusty little bookshop somewhere for 50p.
Following on from that, I just wanted to talk about Luthen's ship. which I'm growing more and more fond of, is and it's known as a Fondor Hallcraft, which is, and Cassian was very surprised that it had a, you know, the light speed capability, obviously modified and modified and modified.
Yeah.
And Fondor is served as a massive manufacturing hub for the Imperials.
Oh, really?
Yeah, featuring dozens of orbital shipyards, known as the Fondor shipyards.
Oh.
And that's obviously just a basic craft, you know, but it has a, you know, light speed capability. But it also had to, and this is why I think it reminded you of the Falcon last week, was it, because it has that, the glass canopy over the World War, which is reminiscent of the World War II bombers.
No, I also, and that explains a lot, that it was an Imperial sort of shipyard, or that it comes from, because a lot of the interior design and some of the panels and that look very Imperial.
Yeah,
as well, mixed in with all of the creamy stuff. There's those sort of like onyxy sort of like panels here and there with the red and blue sort of lights and stuff. So it's a great ship.
And I was trying to figure out, you know, he doesn't, Luthen doesn't have a droid, but he has ship.
The ship is a droid.
But it's called it's called the Fondor droid mod. Is what it comes up as in the subtitles. And it was a really funny bit when they'd landed on Aldani, and Cassian's just looking at the wheel and thinking, maybe I can just. And then the droid mod turns around and says, "Something I can help you with."
What I love about that is the way it rotates, and it's got one's clearly an eye on it on the mod, and I just the sound of it again. I'm just wondering if one of those is actually a gun barrel. Because it turns and focuses and points at him, and it's like,
yeah.
I mean, it could be. It's a very good. I thought it was just unit. It's like, you know,
I did it with a built-in laser. I thought it was just like a, you know, the back of an iPhone with different
lenses.
Zoom levels on it. It was just great to be on that ship. And he's like, the med patch is here, and he's just like, "Here, have some med nog." So nog is obviously the alcoholic beverage of choice in the galaxy far, far away.
Is it nearly Christmas? It's like med nog.
So have a sip of this. Not too much though.
Don't you get him woozy and stuff?
Yeah. What I love is, and this happens over and over and over again in this episode, is that his injury matters. You know, you don't get shot in the arm in episode 3 and then it disappears in episode 4.
Yeah.
He's got to deal with it on the ship straight away. And he says, "Oh, can you deal with that? You're bleeding over my floor."
But what I do love about it is that injury conveniently helps Cassian later on, when he becomes Clem, because it almost justifies his, you know, when he's introduced to them. Yeah, he's like, because he's seen battle. And so
he's seen battle, and he says, "Oh, that's a blaster burn." Yeah. And it's interesting, it's a blaster burn rather than a wound. So it obviously sears the skin. But I think 3 times they had to deal with his injury. So it means that blaster fire matters, getting shot matters, getting hurt matters.
So remember, children, don't play with laser guns.
Yeah, which makes the whole world more real.
Mm.
And I don't know if you remember, but last week I said, you know, he's the type of Cassian's the type of guy who will have a knife in his boot.
Yeah,
he actually did have a knife in his boot. Pleased to see.
As I said, who doesn't? James, small things. Exactly. Yes.
And then the ship had just got better and better when he flicked the switch, and he was obviously in his back cave, and the false door comes out, and the
transformation.
And the disguise thing comes down, and just a simple mirror flip. And it was just like that the warm towel just holding for that second while he felt that. And then I wonder what this is. And then as you said, it's just his disguise rack, you know, from everything to the wig to the rings chains. And
I mean, and it goes back to Skellen Skarsgård just acting, and just this transformation, and then he practices his posture.
Yeah.
And his gestures.
And practices his laugh.
And his nuance and his laughs.
Yeah.
And he knows, you know, he's clearly a method actor here. He's not any now.
And how he's going to walk.
Exactly, exactly. Just, it reminded me a little bit of Palpatine in a way. Because here you have, like, you know, a man playing two sides, you know, deceiving everyone on Coruscant. For different reasons and stuff.
Yeah, so I love that ship, and I hope it sticks around and doesn't get blown up like the Mandalorian's one.
No, I think we're probably good for at least the season. As I said, we've got Christmas coming, and they want to sell some Lego kits, so I think we're pretty good for a bit, mate. So I'll be pre-ordering that one. But it's pretty spot on. Can I just say, you always have your moment only in Star Wars.
We'll save that to the notes. I've got one too. But we'll save that only in Star Wars to the end. Stand by, listeners. We'll keep that for the notes section. All right. James, what's your next point?
My last one is another, you know, great social comment on our world and how things change and how they're portrayed in this world and how, you know, they're showing it, and I love it when they're on Aldani and Val's explaining the local population. Well, used to be 40,000 Aldanis on these highlands, and Cassian's like, well, the Empire killed them all, and we always assume that the Empire either enslaves or kills everyone. But this is a great point. It's like, no, they drove them south. They gave them advanced technology and settlements and basically gave them a better standard of living.
Yeah, well, that's just it.
Yeah.
They offered them work.
Yeah.
And that will destroy a culture just as quickly as blaster fire.
Well, I studied this when I was at school and stuff, and this is basically a classic sort of shifting of population from rural areas to towns. I mean, we had it during the Industrial Revolution, which... We caused an awful lot of carnage to the climate when we did that, like, but it was a massive leap forward for civilization on Earth and stuff. And so you can't help thinking the Empire is actually doing some good, Jonathan.
That's a problem.
I mean, it's like, you know, but at what cost?
Well, that's the thing, is they wiped out Cassian's planet, open cut mines, and just took all the minerals and value from that planet and opened up shop on other places. But they do offer work, and they will make the trains run on time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm getting a little bit concerned with Tony Gilroy here, actually, because he's putting loads of English people in the Empire. And he's basically, the Empire is looking a lot like the British Empire at the moment. We're just going to go.
But I love that. I liked in the first one, it felt very colonial, like a colonial outpost. And with the three British officers, especially the one fresh off the boat, you know, overseeing the local population, you know, all very fat and comfortable and living off the fat of the land, basically. And well, that takes us nicely into Aldani and... a new character, which is Vel Sartha, who is played by Faye Marcy. And now it's my turn, James. Did you happen to recognise why she felt so familiar?
She did, didn't she? I give in.
Well, apart from she was on Doctor Who and a few other things, she played in Game of Thrones the waif from the Faceless Men that beat Arya with the stick.
That
actor. I couldn't place her, and then of course we do our research for these podcasts, and it was good to see that was who she was. But I thought she was a great character. I like the little tramp over the highlands of Aldani and
got
to know each other.
Save your wind, and Cassian's like moaning and stuff.
Just a beautiful TIE fighter cameo. It was very satisfying. As you said, gives me some Star Wars chills. But I wanted to talk about the mission that they're planning. And usually in shows, when they tell you the mission, it's all going to go wrong. It's when they cut away from explaining the mission that it all happens to go right, and it's all very clever. So the Lieutenant Gorn comes in, and he arrives in on the speeder bike, which was always amazing. Nice to see a speeder bike. Yes. And they said he is the contact at the garrison. And so obviously they've got someone on the inside, and so the plan is that they're going to sneak their way in to steal the quarterly payroll for an entire Imperial sector to fund the Rebel Alliance, which is another great grounding idea, because rebellions need to be funded. They can't just
they don't just happen.
The plan is to go to the runway, and behind the runway there's a vault, and they go in and steal all the boxes of money, and on the runway is a single Max 7 Rono freighter, which they ask, can you fly? But it's not something that can be flown, so I think maybe it might be in The Mandalorian, hover freighter.
I think it can. I think the way Cassian refers to it, I think it's just in an arrogant way that it's just a brick. It's not like a fancy ship. Because they talk about, because they're going to go through the eye of the storm, aren't they? So it must have trajectory to get into orbit, I think. But I think it's just a case of it's nothing fancy. It's just like,
Right, and well, that's interesting.
Yeah, and it's that... Well, we can see how this is going to go horribly wrong, can't we?
Yeah.
That thing obviously just chugs along, and they've timed it that they have 9 minutes before TIE fighters can get to them from the airbase.
Yeah, so they have timed it to coincide with the undercover of the every 3-year media shower, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
So while all the chaos is going from the celebrations of the media shower, they're hopefully going to fly it out undercover. Mm. And of course, what could go wrong there, James?
Well, I love the fact that how many times has Cassian, or Clem as he's now named, of course, been referred to as disposable. clearly he's not, because he gets all the way to Scarif, but I think somebody, there's going to be some people disposed of out of that team. I mean, but I have to say, I mean, it's great. I mean, they've been like pretending to be shepherds for 5 months, and I love that. It's like, you know, we've been like sleeping on rocks and eating moss or whatever she says for 5 months, and you just bring him in for 3 days to go. it's just not fair.
But she said that she can see his belief in the cause, and that's enough for them. So
that's the young lad who says that.
Very convenient. Oh, the young lad.
To be fair, who got caught sleeping on the hilltop. Yeah, exactly. I don't know if I'm going to take his word for it.
And the other interesting thing, which has come up online a fair bit, when we're in our deeply suspicious mode of Andor before the series came out, and there was just the trailer. The weapons they were holding looked like an AK-47 with a short clip.
It was. I mean, that was. I'm like, okay.
We could just try. Just that was the one nitpick.
You're right. Of all the production design and all of the other cool weapons and all the rest of it, I know you're on the show that these are repurposed weapons, etc., probably from a different time and that. But do a little bit.
But that's
bit
how
of
they had hands. Hans Blaster was the pistol grip from a heavy machine gun combined with a couple of other different pieces of World War II weaponry, which apparently there aren't any left because they've all been cut up and turned into Hans Solo blasters. which is a shame, but I understand.
But you're right. I mean, they could have. I'm sure we're going to be shown up, and there's going to be a reason for this or whatever. But like, there could have been a little bit more customization on those, I think.
Looked a little bit too real world, but you know, we'll forgive that one because I think they're hitting everything else on point, especially with all the production design and the.
Well, that's why it was a little jarring, because everything else is so spot on. And I was thrown. So I'm sure there's going to be a reason for it. We'll find out that they were taken from it. So,
But getting back to the production design, I'd like to bring up the scene at the gallery, at Lutheran's gallery, which I thought was a fantastic scene. I think that's one of your points too, James.
Yeah, I think we can tag team on this one.
A great introduction of Mon Mothma, and she comes flying in with that beautiful car, sweeping into the space deck arrival, which must be a very nice way to arrive at a gallery.
Yeah. Just stepping out of galleries.
Mind the gap, basically.
Yeah.
And as they're coming in, we see Luthen, and he's in his new character, which he just played so fantastically and so wide. And to just see him, that fake smile, he says to his assistant, is about the driver, because Mon Mothma had the new driver, which is immediately suspicious.
Yeah.
Is he Chandralan, which is Mon Mothma's...
homeworld, yeah.
Yeah. And from Wikipedia, the Chandralans were a cultural group of humans who called the planet of Chandrala home. They were regarded as peaceful but slightly haughty, pedantic, and interested in politics. Prominent Chandralans individuals include Senator Mon Mothma and Ben Solo, interestingly enough.
Really?
According to Wikipedia, don't quote me on that.
I believe also her home world was another city world similar to Coruscant, I read as right. well. So it was another one of those, like a capital of their empire kind of thing. So are you talking about Ben Solo as in
from the sequels? That's what let's click on the link and see.
Because he's the son of Solo, who's a smuggler. And Leia, who's from Organa.
Yeah.
So how would that make him a Chun?
Well, he might have been born... Yeah, his homeworld, a biographical information, homeworld, Chandrila, born 5ABY on Chandrila. Yeah, so he was...
ABY, is it after Yavin?
After the Battle of Yavin.
Brilliant. Yeah. Love that.
Yeah. That surprised me as well, but
I guess
Wars fandom wiki. Yeah,
I guess that's the capital world equivalent of Coruscant. I guess if Coruscant is under the Empire, then Leia sort of spent time there.
Yeah, well, there was no Alderaan for.
All right, don't rub it in for her. Don't rub it in. Come on.
It's still a sore point. Okay. But it was an amazing change of character and. Yeah. I felt like
he almost became a Baz Luhrmann character. It's great.
Yes.
He could have been from Moulin Rouge, or he could have been Elvis or something.
The showman. So. Yeah.
Yeah.
The
ringling. He's all front and he's all gestures and smarm. It's brilliant. So good.
And then he offers her as a gift for her husband. He's like, "Would you like a Ujapan monk cudgel?"
God. Who wouldn't, Jonathan? Who wouldn't? I know you would.
Exactly.
I could see that hanging on your wall.
Of thousands of years old, but it was Utapau is the planet where it was from the clone from the prequels.
That's very Grievous.
And, where General Grievous was, and all the winged aliens were. We had all those caves and everything, so it was obviously an ancient weapon of the Utapauans. Yeah. But we really saw that Mon Mothma was really starting to feel the pressure, and she's like, and she said, "I may have found someone." And he's like, "Oh, we can't."
Who is it? Who is it? People. I know who it is.
Do you know who it is? Was it for no spoilers?
No, I don't know, because I don't write the show. But I would, I would imagine, right? Do we think?
Well, what's your guess? Because I wanted to
let's put money on this, Jonathan. Put money on
this. Go on.
I'm going Senator Organa.
Oh, really?
Well, because at this point he's not been introduced. Oh, I guess he's very close.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right.
Because he's close to Mon Mothma, and then he is obviously involved on the Scarif, by the point we get to Scarif in Rogue One, because he's there and he's like, "I must run back to Alderaan to tell them."
I think I'm completely wrong, because I thought it might have been Sol Guerrera, but obviously they will run in completely different circles.
I don't think he's coming to the gallery very soon, is he, really?
No, exactly. He won't be able to be snuck in.
He won't even be affording those coins that the driver was looking at.
Exactly right.
Can I make a couple of comments on Luthen's shop? So I'm calling this the Luthen's Easter shop. Because the Easter eggs in here are just like...
I didn't look in detail.
You didn't. So if you start freeze-framing stuff, right, I've got a few here. So
excellent.
If you look around the room, apparently, there's Mandalorian armor here and there. There's bits and pieces, but the best one and the big one. Yeah. So remember that there's the shot and the, you know, like Mon Mothma and him are talking, and you see the armor that looks like Vader behind with the big spikes out the helmet.
Right.
That is the Dark Lord Stormkiller's armor.
Oh, really?
Which is from the video game Force Unleashed.
Yeah.
Which is the main sort of Sith character from that. So it's interesting that it's Disney now sort of subtly bringing into canon more and more of, you know, the characters that have been developed in the video game.
Because I was like, you know, when they decanonized the expanded universe, I thought that was a little bit rash.
Yeah,
you know, and harsh. Like, all those fans, that I know they overlapped and there wasn't a clear cut, but there were so many great stories in there, including General Thorne, which I hope one of the other series will get to. And I actually read those novels. They were really enjoyable. But
I think...
Tell me more about that piece of armour.
Well, I mean, so that, as I said, that's Dark Lord Stormkiller's armour, which is from the game Force Unleashed, which leads us to believe that Disney might sort of be moving it, you know, to opening up the canon to a bit more, which I hope so, because then we could get from the Knights of the Old Republic era the Sith Lord Revan, I'm sure everyone knows, but he was a former Jedi who then became a Dark Lord of Sith, who created a Sith Empire way back, like millennia ago and stuff. And I think Revan is mentioned, there is some, I think it's production design book or something for the more recent films, and I think it's in Rise of Skywalker that is mentioned somewhere. So I think that, you know, this may come back in. So that's very exciting. But I also, there is, now, again, back to your Wikipedia mention earlier, don't quote me on this, everyone, but I read, I didn't see it myself, I didn't have time, it's 5 a.m, I apologise. But apparently somebody, if you freeze frame and go through that room and scrub around, somebody says there is Indiana Jones whip frozen in carbonite.
That would be amazing. All right, we have to search for a screenshot of that.
Search for that. But I mean, that room is just like, it's. I mean, the minute I saw that, I'm like, hold on a minute. And that's when
there's got to be stuff here.
On the third watch, I hit pause and I'm like, right, I'm going down a rabbit hole here, because there was definitely some shit in the background there that is deliberately put there. There's also apparently a couple of Sith and Jedi holocons, which store information and stuff there. If anyone can find us the whip, send us a screen.
If you notice anything, please write in.
Let's just let's outdo Wikipedia here. Come on, kids, we can do it. Just a great room and a great scene. Very interested in seeing how this sort of plays out. And as you mentioned, Mon Mothma is, you know, and when she gets back in her car, we see her and she takes a breath and she unclasps the top of her jacket, and you can just see the pressure that's coming from her. So it's
and her costuming was incredible in this as well. That flowing coat, immaculate. And the beautiful but in the same colors as the ISB, but a little bit warmer. And then she heads back to her apartment, and that was just such a glorious place. But I found it interesting that her husband, Perrin, seems like a bit of a dick already.
Oh, my God.
What are you doing, Mon Mothma? You can do much better than that.
Well, yes. I mean, I'm gonna go out on a limb here that he's probably from a very rich family.
Yeah, right.
And she's probably going to use all his money to fund the rebellion, in which case we can suffer Perrin the dick for a little bit long.
But I thought it was interesting that he was definitely in samurai robes going with the apartment, even had a top knot on.
Nasty top knot.
But I found it interesting that it was in that blue that mirrored the color of the corpo,
corporation.
The corpo security. So it seems like that the corporations have this a blue hue to it. And he was it was interesting because he's in such a corrupt, rich bubble that he's considering that the people he's invited to dinner are fun when they're clearly giving Mon Mothma distress. And of course she's a senator, obviously, and everything she's trying to do to improve the galaxy, that they're just standing in front of it.
I think that's, again, it's another reference back to real world politics and society. Yeah. It's like, you know, they're really fun, but you know, they've got slaves. It's like, you know, yeah. I think some people just don't, you know, they don't see what they don't need to see.
Get some Gorman guests. Like, they just cut off the shipping lanes of how many of these them will starve. And so the guests that are coming to this lovely dinner, the fun ones, are the people cutting off supplies to people without the galaxy, which will lead to starvation of death. And then his line at the end was like, must everything be boring and sad? This is the moment where rebellions obviously get sparked.
Yeah, well, I think even from that comment of, oh, everything be boring and salad, when everything is boring and sad, it's like, clearly this guy's got to get abducted or end up in a shitty part of Coruscant at some point. You imagine, he's like, he's clearly lived in his bubble.
Yeah, his life might get a little bit more interesting.
He might get some life lessons later, hopefully. Tony, help us.
Another interesting thing I thought while we're speaking of Luthen was the Kyber crystal pendant that he gave to Cassian, which came as a bit of a surprise. And as we know, as I'm sure you all know, the Kyber crystal is the source of power for the lightsaber.
And the Death Star.
And the Death Star, yes, exactly. But I also think it just amplifies the Force a little bit. So when Jyn had the pendant and the monk kind of recognized from it, it obviously has some innate power of its own. And I always think of it kind of bring a little bit of luck with it. So the Force is on your side, bending events towards your favor. So when Luthen gives Cassian the pendant, which is a Kuotai signet, and that celebrates the uprising against the Rakatan invaders, and that refers to battles that have already been fought. You know, like when they refer to the Clone Wars in A New Hope, I'm like, what the hell are the Clone Wars? Did I miss something? Have I missed a movie?
Yeah.
You know, so like when you refer to battles and events that have already come to pass, it really adds to the depth of the story and the world.
Yeah, and the whole universe, and like how this, clearly we're now at the point where there is a whole backstory written for the whole universe, like back thousands of years and stuff.
And drawing on your point from before of going back to, this was actually the Rakatans were an amphibian race of humanoids created specifically for the Knights of the Old Republic game.
Oh, there we go. See, I knew, I was racking my brains when you started talking about that, Chris. I'm like, damn it, I did do some research on that and I can't remember. But again, it just all ties together in a neat little bow. So like, why have they not greenlit Knights of the Old Republic show?
I think they're doing a reissue of the old game, which I never played, and so I think they're doing a polish and a reissue on PS5.
There was talk of.
I think when Kathleen Kennedy she announced 10 series, that there was was one of them based in Knights of the Old Republic, but you know that announcement is, I think, only half of them. But again, if we get half of the announcements, because we have had The Mandalorian, we have had Boba Fett, we've got Andor, and we've got Ahsoka coming, and Obi-Wan, so that's five. Yeah, that's pretty good, I think, from that announcement.
Yeah,
although we did lose, I think we are going to lose a Rogue Squadron, and I'm quite happy if we never see, if Rian Johnson's films never see the light of day.
Move on.
Any other points, James, you'd like to bring up, or should we head to notes?
I've got I've got some, just silly sort of notes.
Well, let's go on to notes then. All right, so here we are in the notes section. James, what have you got?
Just one, really. I think we've covered most of the things. I just love the back to the ISB when they're going through their daily sort of notes and reports and stuff, and it's like proactive measures needed, like added security for Scarif. I mean, clearly that budget got cut somewhere down the line because that didn't fucking work, did it? But I just like, they've upped production at Scarif. We need to up security. And that.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting too. That was a nice little call
funny
out.
Little nod to it. Yeah.
I'm loving the liberal use of the macro binoculars.
Oh my God. yes. And the different types as well. I love the our sort of covert shepherds, as we'll call them, like sort of Bell's team, and they've got the clunky old one that's like looks like it's made from some old coffee machine or something with like the I need to get myself some of those binoculars.
All right, James, so let's do the only in Star Wars section. What was your only in Star Wars?
Right. It's a slight nitpick and stuff. So my only in Star Wars moment this week is, all right, with the ship is there, it's already landed on Aldani, and then Luthen says, I'm going to go out and talk to this woman. We may argue. And he steps down the ramp, which is already down, and then they feel the need for the big of gas and like exhaust thing. I always thought that was just a pressure release from the pistons of putting the platform down. Clearly it's just a VFX, so you walk through smoke when you come off your ship.
It's like a bit of boxer being introduced.
Exactly.
I mean some nice steam to walk through,
and it's you know, I remember seeing it in Empire when they're in the so-called asteroid on the Millennium, you're in different atmospheres, and I think you expect that, but like they're on a beautiful breezy planet, and it's just like, where's all this coming from? This steam coming from? So
I always thought it was just an exhaust, a pressure release thing.
Yeah, exactly. But it's already landed. It's been there for 10 minutes. It's like, I'm going to press the fucking button.
I think it's just a design aspect of that ship, because you know everything is very theatrical in Star Wars. Yeah. But that's a beautiful only in Star Wars. I have one. My only in Star Wars was when they were making the plan. And they're saying, they're like, there's only 40 soldiers there, and because no one is stupid enough to try it.
Of course.
How many times in Star Wars have attacks been planned because no one is stupid enough to try it?
Exactly. Like the Empire is so arrogant, and this will never work. At some point, someone in the Empire is going to go through history and go, guys, maybe we should put an extra couple of garrisons on just a few. You know, we're running a whole, we can afford it. Let's just put a few there.
That's what I loved in the first three episodes when they're trying to apprehend Cassian. They're like, how many men do you want? Well, I think he's armed. We better go with 12 when we split them up into three groups. And they'd actually thought through the attack plan and had it in several different wings. So. They had actually thought it through, but this time they're relying on no one is stupid enough to try it, so we're going to get away with it.
It makes for great TV and movies. So.
Yeah, well, a movie's got a movie, I guess.
Yeah.
All right, so that's our show so far. Let's come back with the listener feedback. And welcome back. This is the listener feedback. Send in your comments to us at the Podcastica Facebook page. And you should actually join the group. It's really fun. Lots of people interacting and talking all good things about all the show that Podcastica is covering. And our first letter is from Steve Barr from last week's. I can't wait to see Andor travel to other planets and kill people there too.
Nice.
I assume there will be flashbacks to give some justification for Andor thinking his sister is alive and out in the galaxy. Y'all are raving about a show with a droid named B2 EMO. B2 EMO, you know that, right? and celebrating the writing when large amounts of dialogue is in untranslated Kanari. Yeah, I had to check whether my subtitles are on that bit. Yeah. But I think the show has potential, but we will need more outsmarting the Imperials and good English dialogue along the lines of what was said in the silly Engines on Chains set piece before I'm won over. Well, look, Steve, I know we'll be won over when I receive a live Steve comment, so I'm hoping I'll get one of that these days.
And from Bianx Vargut, I can't translate all your emojis, so I'm sorry here, Bianx, but thank you for the podcast. Cuddly face, headphones, hearts, and congratulations. I think that's
party emoji. Yeah,
party heart. Yeah, these three episodes were so good, and I can't wait for next week's episode and your podcast. Winky face.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good to have that feedback. And Jason Cabassi says, another fantastic episode, in my humble opinion. I love the contrast between the beautiful yet sterile environments of the Imperial forces, the Senator's home, and the Artifact Museum, as do we, versus a meager outdoor camp thrown together by the rebels. I'm fascinated to get a more in-depth look at the workings of the Empire, and in a way that feels very relatable to aspects of our world, with elites like the Senator's husband who are completely disconnected from the consequences of their actions and could give a shit about them as long as they get to keep on living their luxurious lives. I also love that the bad guys are the freaking Empire, and so we come into this with built-in hatred of them. The series doesn't need to worry about that part, already taken care of by decades of Star Wars movies. And last, poor old Clem, wasn't even sure he wanted it to be where he was, and now no one seems to want him there either. What a trooper, so to speak. Though I kind of wonder if he's the type of guy who is more inclined to stick it out when it seems like people don't want him there. Very much looking forward to seeing how this mission goes next week. I feel like we should get too attached to any of these rebels. Yes, Jason, I think so too. I have a very bad feeling about this. All right, that's our show. Thanks for listening, everyone. If you want to write in and leave us a message, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com.
And while you're there, you can go and check out all the other shows as well.
Yeah, and I'll be appearing on the Cast of the Rings with Penny and next week, so make sure you check that out. And if you're listening to this on House Podcastica and you're not interested in the other shows, and we also have a podcast just for the Disney Plus Star Wars shows, which you can also find at podcastica.com or search for the Star Wars TV cast on your podcast app.
And then don't forget to rate and review and tell your friends about us, because it's good to grow this show.
Yeah, it will really help us grow our show. And all right, that's our show.
And thanks for listening.
May the Force be with you.